Accession number 28361, reel 33.
General Julian Thompson, reel 33. You were saying that the intelligence was a two-way street. Presumably you were sending reports out and you were getting information coming down all the time.
Yeah, we were generating our own intelligence with OPs and following up leads. So an OP would report those activity which was suspicious or whatever in a particular area, which would then cause us to investigate it a bit further.
How was your intelligence organised? Did you have a cell in every company location, or did you have it centralised at...
Every company had its own
intelligence
cell. And then commander headquarters had the IO ran the intelligence setup, which was beefed up with more people because it was the collating and all the work that needed to be done. Was pretty time-consuming, and of course this is pre-computers. Computers are pretty crude instruments. We didn't have any computers, and then of course he used to go to intelligence briefings pretty frequently, and then there was an intelligence LO from brigade at commander headquarters all the time.
Was he from the INT Corps, or was he?
He was INT Corps. Mm. Yeah.
In the commander headquarters. Intelligence staff, how did they keep the information? Was it on file cards or was it in...
Yes, as far as I remember, with file cards, because this is again pre-computer.
So it's file card and shoebox technology.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, pretty low-tech stuff.
Well, that really depends upon the quality of the human factor, doesn't it?
Sure, sure.
How did you go about choosing Marines to go on to the IO staff? Did they volunteer, or were you...
Well, some of them volunteered. Some of them were people who had an aptitude for it. Mm. I think, as far as I remember, that part of the Northern Ireland training was that they went off and did special courses. Mm. There were special courses run for people who were going to be on battalion and commander intelligence staff.
Yeah. What about at company level, which one might consider the critical level, really, for this kind?
Yeah, well, you had an intelligence. Cell there,
yeah.
And the point, or one of the points there, was to make certain the intelligence cell people went out on patrol quite a bit, because they needed to all the time update their intelligence. And one of the ways we used to do very low level intelligence was a thing called farmers' daughters patrols, which were going round to farmhouses. And usually there wasn't a lovely, beautiful girl greeting you. It was some crabby old chap who was smelling of booze. But the aim of the game, really, was a way of getting into a farmhouse, if you were invited in, which wasn't very often, or into a farm yard, just to suss the place out, see if there was anything different from the last time you were there. Very low-level stuff. And asking, you know, who's here, and... Can we have a chat with them? And sometimes it was just abuse. You couldn't force your way in, of course. If they didn't invite you in, you couldn't go in. If they said, you know, go away, then you had to go away. Yeah. But farmers' daughters patrolling was the sort of lowest level of intelligence gathering. And it was based on the hope that you would spot something different from last time round, that something would be let slip inadvertently, which would give you a piece of information.
Was it a productive method?
Very difficult to tell, quite frankly. Jolly difficult to tell how much information. A lot of it was fed back to brigade, of course. So you would say, you know, old Seamus Toomey or someone has been away for a holiday in Dundalk, is now back in his farm. He's got someone staying with him. That sort of stuff.
Were there any beautiful milkmaids to be discovered?
Very few.
How many men would you have then in the cell at company level? Would this be a sergeant?
This would be an NCO, so there was an INT NCO, and I suppose there were about three, something like that. not yeah. many.
And were they operating on the same kind of system as the chaps at Commando?
Yes, they. I mean, among their many duties was, apart from collating the intelligence the patrols gave them, was briefing patrols, making certain that, because they were briefed by the IO on what the situation was, who to look out for, what the recent incidents were. So a patrol, before it went out on the ground, would be briefed by the intelligence, would be given an INT brief by the company INT NCO.
Now, you mentioned, we've mentioned shootings, IEDs, and you mentioned an IED at Warren Point. Was,
yep.
that, in the, was that in the middle of your tour, or towards the end?
It was, I can't remember, it was about the middle of the tour. And the interesting thing about that was that it was a whole stack of beer kegs full of explosives stuffed into a culvert under the Warren Point Road. And the reason it was spotted was that someone saw a command wire leading across, because the other side of the river from Warren Point is actually in the south. And you can sit in the south, and just the width of a river separates you from the Warren Point Road. And I can probably show you a picture of them in a minute. The clearance was done in the normal way, and it was a sufficiently big job. I used to try and go to some of the big clearances, and I went to that one, and I set up my ICP by some what had obviously been lodge gates of an old country house which no longer existed, but the gates were there near the road. And the interesting thing about that is, 3 years later, when two para lost a lot of people at Warren Point in the same place, and not the same device, it was a device actually in a hay wagon, not under the road, the CO of the Queensland Highlanders, because it was in their patch, so it was a para patrol but in the Queensland Highlanders patch, used the same ICP as I had used 3 years before. Almost exactly 3 years before, and the one of the pillars of the gates had been hollowed out and filled with explosives, and he was blown to pieces. The biggest bit they found of him was one of his shoulder straps. So they had watched our clearance, seen I'd used that as an ICP, and booby-trapped it the next time round.
Was that detonated on a command wire?
No, that was detonated on a radio control.
A radio control.
Yeah.
Sounds rather careless of them to have left a command wire visible from the...
Well, it was. Yeah. But they, I suppose, I don't know why they did it that way. Mm. It may have been something to do with the way the culvert was sited in that... Because it was up a sort of metal drain pipe, it may have been some technicality of them worrying that the signal wouldn't get through to it. So, I mean, I don't know. We'll have to ask them. One day we'll ask them, I expect.
How long did it take to clear the device on that occasion? Was it a long job like the...
Not very long. I mean, I think it took about a day.
Yes.
You know, it was sort of found in the morning, and by the evening we got it clear.
And what was the scale of that device? Was it a...
If you stop the tape, I'll show it to you.
In your photograph, that culvert bomb was a beer keg and a couple of milk churns.
Yes.
Do you have any recollection of how much explosive there was and what sort of explosive it was in the culvert?
It was 250 pounds of explosive in total.
What idea did you have their intention? Was it to...
It was to catch... Because the people in Newry used to do quite a lot of vehicle patrolling on the outskirts of Newry, the aim would have been to catch a vehicle patrol.
That would be a Land Rover.
A Land Rover coming back. Or going down to... Because we also had a patrol on Carlingford Lock in two little converted... They looked like sort of harbour tugs.
Yes.
And they were under my command. I didn't provide the people for them. They came from... They were actually Marines and sailors, and their object was to patrol Carlingford Lock which was a sea loch, which leads up to Newry, and the road which these beer cans were produced on, this IED was put in, was one of the main routes for taking supplies, stores and fuel to where these boats were operating from. So it was quite a busy road, and quite a lot of military vehicles going along it all the time. So that's what they would have been after.
What were the patrols on Collingford Lock after? Were they after catching people who were trying to get stuff in?
They were trying to prevent the movement of people and equipment across the lock, and to make certain that it didn't become an easy way of getting stuff from south to north and avoiding using roads.
Did they have any contacts?
Very few. But had they not been there, of course, it would have been a busy way of doing it. It would have been a very good, because it was quite a long loch, and you could have used boats to get stuff across. And obviously they had taken stuff across in boats, otherwise there wouldn't have been a patrol there. So it was preventative rather than proactive. Yeah. It was one of those things, if you don't patrol it, they'll use it. But once you start patrolling it, nothing ever happens.
Must be rather tough for the sailors and marines doing it, because
yes,
it must get boring knowing that you're going to go out again on patrol and nothing will happen.
Yes,
because you are.
Yes, I mean, the only way to liven life up for them was they had Germany rubber boats, was to get them to mount snap vehicle checks themselves using a boat along on the coast road. So if you wanted to set up a snap vehicle check on that road, instead of driving all the way from Newry, a much better and safer way of doing it was to do it from the sea, so that you just set up a vehicle checkpoint there for a couple of hours and then disappeared out to sea again.
The amphibious VCP.
It's
a new
concept
in internal security, isn't it?
Well, it is, really.
Another thing you mentioned, besides IEDs, was mortaring, and you were saying that you were mortared on a number of occasions.
Yes.
Were these regular military mortars, or were they improvised?
No, they were improvised mortars. Oh. The two serious attacks were on both across Maglen.
Yes.
One on the 30th of August, using what was then called the Mark 8 mortar, which I got a picture of here, and I've actually got a picture of the way it was fired from. It was an 8-barreled mortar, imagine on the back of a flatbed truck, which was driven into a scrap yard, which was just within range of Crossmaglen, and actually you could actually see the roof of Crossmaglen station from it. So that's how they lined it up, and it was a bit of piping. You can see a man holding with fins, and that's what they fired it from. And it was fired electronically.
Looks like another pipe.
There were loads of ordinary drain pipes. So they weren't military mortars at all. They were, thank God, they were homemade, but they were bad enough. I mean, they caused something like 6 casualties, and some of the bombs actually went through the roof and didn't explode, and so they had to be cleared by the ATO, Staff Sergeant Bruce, actually. Who was awarded a George Medal for his clearing of these unexploded bombs. Some of them exploded and some didn't.
What was the fusing on them? Contact fuse?
They were contact fuses. They had a spring-loaded plunger to operate a nose fuse. So on the sharp end, there was a spring, which was sufficiently strong so it wouldn't go off when you fired it as it set back. But it was strong enough so when it hit something, it set off the charge inside the mortar.
What was the charge? Was that a co-op mix, or was it a...
No, it was actually... I don't seem to have a record of what the charge was here, but it was a... It had a mixture, I think, of commercial and homemade explosives. The Mark 8 was the biggest one they'd used up to that time, until they used the Mark 9 against us, which was even bigger.
Yeah.
So we were on the receiving end of the first efforts of these bombs, and this was really what led to Crossmaglen being turned into the place that it is now, which is a sort of concrete submarine Because in those days it was just the police station with some fairly rudimentary sort of wire over the top, the aim being that it would catch the bombs and they'd go off. It was a screen, just a screen. But the next bombing, which was with the Mark 9, which was a bit later, was far bigger in October. And this was 10 mortars again, and each one of them is that size.
That's much fatter, isn't it?
It's much fatter. In fact, it's a commercial...
It's a gas cylinder.
And again, and that was the first time that was used in the province.
Did it have a similar sort of fusing system on it?
Yes, it had a plunger of fuse. And they were electronically fired. So in the base of the mortar here, between the fins, you had, it was rather like a normal 81mm mortar. The primary charge is in here, and that's what fires it out of the barrel. And it's got an electric wire coming out of it, so you fire it.
That looks as though the fins, particularly, have been actually well machined.
Oh yes, yes. I mean, it's quite a well-made piece of kit.
Yeah.
That was one that didn't go off and was defused by Ito, and that caused a hell of a lot of damage.
What kind of tubes did they use for that? Was it, I mean, because that's fatter than a drain pipe?
Yes, they had. I think it was sort of special. Piping that they pinched or bought, probably the sort of stuff you'd use in the oil and gas industry, that sort of thing, you know.
Refineries.
It was pretty good stuff.
Yeah.
The sadness about that particular one was that we'd had a OP overlooking the square from which it was fired for several weeks. We put an OP into the Sinn Féin headquarters in Cross Maglen, into the roof, without them knowing about it. My recce were pretty good at that sort of thing. And they broke into the Sinn Féin headquarters using a loo window at the back at night. And we had an OP in there for nearly a month in the attic, which was changed over, of course. It was only finally discovered when the secretary of the local Sinn Féin secretary decided that he would like to take his secretary up to the attic for what Montgomery would call a bit of horizontal refreshment, and was surprised when his head came through to find an OP in there. And the OP sergeant said to him, "If you read a word of this, I shall tell your wife." But we couldn't leave it there. It was far too dangerous.
Compromised.
But we'd lifted a tile in the roof so you could look into the square, and the aim actually was to dominate the square, because we thought that would be the next place we were mortared from. And had that OP, we only took it out about a week or so before
the mortar was fired,
and we would have been able to hit the guys as they were setting it up. And it's amazing how chance comes into it, because the very day of the mortar firing, the company had done a big sweep of all the derelicts around Crossglen Square. Crossglen Square was surrounded by houses and derelicts. When you look down on it from a helicopter, it looked rather like a film set. You had these sort of houses with no roofs, and the derelicts, they had as part of a way to preserve the derelict, ha ha ha, they had put bits of wood in the window. But you then discovered they were on hinges. So you could go into the derelict and open a window and shoot at people and then run off, you see.
There were shutters though.
There were shutters. So occasionally we'd do a sweep. And we'd done a huge company sweep of the square, and afterwards, before the Crossman Gun was bombed, I was down there watching this thing, and the company commander said, when the last man was in, I almost thought of leaving some people behind. So, you know, the whole company would go back in, and they'd all be counted back in, of course, by the opposition. But with a bit of
recirculation,
you could leave 10 people behind out in the square. And I said, oh, well, never mind. What a pity. I'd flown back, was getting out of my helicopter, when somebody said, Crossman Glen's just been hit by mortars. So I got on the helicopter and went back again. Mm. And so had we left those guys, there'd been a good chance that they would have
catching the fellows,
caught them doing it. So it's just, you know, chance.
What's the second bombing that with the Mark 9? Was that also from a flatbed, or was it a different?
That was a lorry. It was a flatbed lorry, yeah. I think. It was a lorry. I think it wasn't a flatbed in that it was built up around the side, so you couldn't have, when it was being driven from the south,
you couldn't see in it. Mm. Was this device then put together in the south, driven over the border, and then fired at you?
Yes. Mm. They were all put together in the south, these devices.
How did they manage to calculate the range? Because getting the direction would be one thing, taking a bearing either from the map or...
They'd done experiments.
Oh, I see.
We used to hear them. You'd hear huge bangs in the south, and we'd heard a series of big bangs in the south in the preceding weeks, and so we knew they were working out for something. And they had a training, as I told you, in the south.
Yeah.
And certainly the company Int guy at Cross McGlen said they're up to something. Mm. They're up to something. And unfortunately, we didn't discover what it was until too late. So they would work out exactly how far you had to be away with that kind of charge and at that angle to get bombs into the target.
So it'd be trial and error to get the datum.
Yeah, yeah.
Could you actually hear the things coming? Could you hear a thump when they...
I wasn't in the base when it was fired. I'd just left. I'd been out of it about an hour, no less, half an hour. Mm. And I can't remember. I think they did hear a bang and thought, my God, what's this? And then it was sort of bang, bang, bang. And the bombs landed in the base and did a hell of a lot of damage in the base. Wounded 6 or 7 people. And it was that's what caused the base, as I say, to be hardened.
Yeah, made bomb-proof.
And be made bomb-proof because of this damn bomb, this Mark 9. Mm.
Did you have any sort of contact or relations with the security forces in the Republic?
No. Yeah. The RUC had contacts with the Garda on a policeman-to-policeman basis.
Yes.
At that stage, there was not much cross-border cooperation. I didn't think. There was a bit, but not much. Sorry, I'm just trying to find some pictures. I mean, that bomb completely destroyed a building.
Oh yes,
the top there.
It's very much wrecked.
Yeah.
Was anybody in it when they?
No. They were actually most of the guys, luckily, because they just come in from an operation. They were in the middle. They were in the centre building.
Yes.
Either having a shower or sorting themselves out. Mm. So the outer buildings, which were the most vulnerable, were not. There was nobody in them.
And they were the accommodation.
The accommodation, yeah, yeah. That was just going. Can we stop?
Of course. Did you have a drill set up for responding to such attacks?
Yes. Okay. The quick reaction. Every base had obviously people in OPs and sentry positions, but there was also a sort of quick reaction force that would dash out. And they did. They dashed out, but they'd gone. Mm. It was too late.
Well, presumably they'd gone and left the area long before the things went on.
Well, no, they'd set them off by electrically, remotely. Yes, yes. So boom, 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 10 go, and they're in their car, and they've gone, you know, before you're out of the gate.
How far away could they be in order to set these things off? What would be the range of the electrical?
I think they were only a few... They were probably 50 yards away. And they were sufficiently far away so that if they the thing blew up or they had a cook-off or it didn't work properly. They weren't certainly sort of around it.
No.
But they were sufficiently far away so that they were safe if one of them blew up in the tube.
Mm. Were there any malfunctions?
As far as I remember, no. Mm.
Did you ever get any idea of who was actually doing this kind of thing, who their mortar expert was?
No. We didn't know. Mm. They lived in the south, these guys. Yeah. They'd come across and do it and disappear again.
Yeah. So they're a raiding force. Another thing you mentioned was attacks with RPG.
Yeah.
Were these Russian made?
These were the RPG-7. Mm. They fired one of our Wessex helicopters coming in to cross the Glen to try and knock it down. The helipad across the Glen was on the Gaelic football pitch, which was another source of trouble, which was right outside the base. So it wasn't when helicopters came in and out, you staked it out.
Yeah.
But they had. I think the helicopter had come in without announcing, or for some reason there wasn't a stakeout, and so the guy fired an RPG-7, and it just went underneath the helicopter, hit the step, you know, the step, or there's a sort of step, hit that, didn't knock it down, but that's what they were aiming at, to try and kill everyone in the helicopter, and they would have done had they hit the helicopter.
How high off the ground was the helicopter, weren't they?
Hovering, and was about, I suppose, the height of this room.
Yeah.
Not high.
Just coming in.
Mm. Yeah.
Because the RPG had a range of what, 150 metres?
Something like that. Yeah. There were some houses that overlooked the pitch.
Yes.
And they'd gone into one of those.
Mm.
Or in the gardens of one of these. Mm.
Did you know before this attack that they had RPGs?
Oh, yes.
Mm.
Mm. Yeah.
Did they do any other attacks?
Well, they fired at helicopters
with
small arms, but they didn't hit any.
Mm.
But not often. And there was an occasion right at the end where, which I just reminded myself, when again towards the end of our tour, there'd been a chap who had been driving a gang of gunmen from one hijacking to another. There was a province-wide campaign of hijacking. This was in order to sort of flood the market.
Yeah.
So you had hundreds of hijackings going all over the province, and so everyone was rushing about from one place to the other trying to stop it. And this guy drove a gang from one hijacking to another with a gunman, and in fact he'd been driving a gunman who then escaped when he heard a company commander's helicopter coming overhead. The gunman escaped across the border, and the man in the car, the driver, fired at the helicopter that missed, but that was his big mistake, was stopping to fire the helicopter, because the company commander landed and grabbed him. And this particular chap admitted to taking part in a number of incidents, including the murder of a Protestant at Tully Valley and Orange Hall, and the King's Mills murders, which were a series of murders, and the murder of UDR men as well. And he was tried a year after we left, but that's how long it took, on 13 charges and sentenced to 7 periods of life imprisonment. No doubt he's now out and enjoying himself.
Indeed.
So that was an example of where the chap got carried away, thought he'd fired the helicopter. It was a big mistake. What he should have done is run for the border, which is only 300 metres away.
What did he fire with? What sort of...
A pistol, I think.
Pistol?
Yeah.
Against a helicopter?
Yeah. Mm. I think it could have been a submachine gun. Anyway, he missed.
And you were saying earlier on that you had some large-scale demonstrations to deal with as well.
Well, the biggest demonstration, this is the era of the Women's Peace Movement.
Yes.
And the Women's Peace Movement just decided to meet, have a big rally in Newry. And I was extremely worried that this would be used, not by the women, but as a cover for the IRA... who didn't like the Women's Peace Movement anyway, that they might deliberately attack the Women's Peace Movement in some way, or that they might use it as a cover. So we set up quite a complicated operation in Newry, which I took part in. I used to go on the big ones, and we set up an OP, or a headquarters, on the flat roof of a big block of flats overlooking the peace demonstration, and from there we could see a great spread of Newry. And while we were up there, there was suddenly a huge bang out at the customs post, which was outside Newry, and this was the customs post on the main road from Dublin to Belfast, and the customs post was just outside Newry. And in fact, it turned out to be a petrol tanker, which the IRA were hoping to roll down the hill onto the demonstration. but it went off.